How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Let me
I'm
get the volume turned up here so I can.
Can you hear me?
I can. I can. Let's see.
Let
I
me see
guess
if
you.
I can turn up my volume. Maybe I.
There. You can
There
see
you
me
are.
now.
I can see
Here I
you.
am.
Yep, perfect. Let me make.
Hey.
Okay, can you turn it up?
I can hear you really well. Yeah, and I
Good.
can.
All right, terrific.
I got it. Well, listen, I've really been looking forward to seeing you and being with you today.
I know, me too. Oh. Yeah, there's coaching and then there's fun coaching. So I knew this would be fun.
Good. I want it to be fun, and I just don't want you to fire me after day one, okay?
No. The effort. I'm coaching a my 6-year-old granddaughter in golf right now. So, ultimate in patience. Remember what I said when I if I didn't become a manager with Merrill Lynch in the old days, I used to tell people I would have been a kindergarten teacher.
That's probably would have been good training.
It's one and the same.
Yeah, well, I'm your kindergartner today. How about that?
I used to say, managers get so mad. They tell their guys one time to an idea, right? And they'd expect people to get it. And I said, you got to understand, human beings don't learn that way. They are skeptical, and plus they don't hear you. Just ask your wife.
Yeah, I know. And amazing. The longer we're married, the less you hear. Actually, I think it's working the other way around.
Right, the less you hear, or you she hears anyway. She claims I don't have I've got a hearing problem. So I call it I call you'll hear this again, but I call it the 5-time rule.
I read that. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really want to expect somebody to get it or hear you until you've literally told them 5 times. The same thing. So I used to pretend, I mean, I'd literally go in and pretend the person had missed the meeting and just tell them all over again what it was that was important out of a meeting or whatever idea I was trying to get across to them. And they'd listen like it was the first time. About the seventh time I'd go in, they'd go, okay, Rob, I get it. I
Yeah,
just
I
want to
know.
make sure. So the difference was that they knew when I kept going back and going back and going back that it was important versus, play of the day or idea of the week or, some BS.
No,
So.
I have that same experience here with all my guys.
Right.
Over and over and over again, repeating. So I'm allergic to I guess it's the what are the flowers they send to the funeral home? Are those peace lilies?
Yeah.
I guess. Majorly allergic to them. And so one of the guys here he
Oh
bought one for every girl in the place. So there's like five of these things. And I walk in the office from a lunch meeting and my allergies are just going crazy. So I thought, okay, well, I need to talk to this guy. So I went and I told him, I said, look, I'm allergic to these things. And unfortunately, we've got to get him out of the office, So I had to leave that day. I couldn't even stay in the office. So about 6 months
no.
go by and
Same.
lilies show up again. And literally they showed up another time. And I finally, I immediately walked in, locked them all in an office, and I went and talked to him and I said, these things can never come in here again. And he said, oh, I didn't know. Are you allergic to them? So finally, we've come to an agreement.
The other thing that I realized is that people that aren't allergic to anything don't really understand allergic.
I've never thought about that. That may be part of the problem. I don't know that he's allergic to anything.
Right. And so he literally doesn't understand allergic.
Okay. I never
He
even thought
thinks
about
it,
that.
he thinks it's maybe you feel the little something. I had a gal that was allergic to any kind of perfume or, and she would literally not be able to be in the office if somebody had perfume on or a man had cologne on.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't understand it until I started to get allergic to things. Now, I got started to get allergic to things at a fairly senior age. And then I'm like, what the hell is happening to me? You know, and it's the normal allergics, right? You're allergic to grasses and to, you know, leaves and things in the fall and flowers in the spring. And I'm just bleeding, you know, eyes, everything.
But you didn't have that growing up?
No.
Wow.
No, it just hit me. I think it's part, I've got a compromised immune system now. And I think that's part of it, which is a later onset situation. So I just really have to. So my empathy is like, wow, I had no idea what these poor people were going through.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of like, it's just an excuse, you know, or, you know, you know how you get when you don't understand something.
Right.
Like, and that, I swear, I bet that's, the guy just doesn't get it. Just that, what do you mean? So you get a little sniffle or something. So what?
Yeah.
No. I mean, you know, with real allergies, things start shutting down, like your throat swells and.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, eyes, headaches. I mean, it's beyond what I don't even remember being as bad. You know, like you said, as you get older, it seems like they get worse. You know, the reaction is worse.
Right. And you think it, as I get older, it should get less. My body gets more used to it. No, it's sort of the opposite. It's sort of for some people, they get over allergies. And my daughter got over a lot of her asthma and things. But man, yeah. So anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
The first thing I always ask is what's on your mind before we get started. And by the way, in coaching, since we're going to kind of run a parallel track here, I'll digress periodically, since you're managing also, it's a great way to open up any conversation, even when you're just stopping in to see somebody. But if you're doing a review, before you get into the review, you know, Derek, before we get into the review, let me ask you a question. What's on your mind?
Mm-hmm. That is a good question.
And then when you're doing your 12-4-2s, before you get into it, you say, you know, we created an agenda for today's meeting, but before we get into that, let me ask you, what else is on your mind? You know, what's on your mind this morning?
That's a good one. I don't ask it specifically like that, but I do ask. There are some that I don't want to know what's on their mind, so I don't ask.
Well, that's my 4:30 conversation.
Right.
No, seriously, right? So I had FAs that, you know, I had done everything humanly possible to convert them to being eager learners or open-minded or possible change candidates. And after a while, I realized it's not going to happen, okay?
Right.
So then every time I went in there, it was at least an hour of them just unloading on me on everything that was wrong with the world, with them, with the firm, with, you know, it was just torture for me. Yeah. Mr. Optimism, Mr. Energy. It was just a drain, you know, an energy drain suck.
It is.
And so what did I do? I knew he left every day at 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So I'd go in at 4:30 or 4:40.
That's perfect time.
I could take 20 minutes of it and then he'd have to go. And I've got, you know, we'll have to pick this up later on. You know,
that's funny. You know what? I did that just last night and he took me till 5:45.
No,
he didn't. I didn't realize what I was doing, but yeah, you're exactly right. I was trying to get in late in the day to, okay, I knew you had a problem. Let's figure it out. I know you got to go. Nah, you know, and we were there another hour. I mean,
postponed dinner.
Right. Anyway, yeah, just let me know how.
Let me call my wife and tell her I'm going to be
there. Well, that's a good idea. Now, so like when you just mentioned about talking to these advisors and, you know, seeing if they're good change candidates or whatever, that's what I want to be. I want to be a good change candidate. And I guess that's one of my big fears. My wife and I have been talking kind of extensively about this, and she said, look, you've got to, you know, jump in both feet and go. Said otherwise, it's like an expensive diet, something you get everything loaded up and then you eat whatever you want to, and you don't really get the benefits out of doing it. So, right. You know, I heard her very clearly last night, and I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to screw it up, I guess is what I'm concerned about. So I've got some fear with that.
It's interesting. Change is, there's a 5-step process to change. And this is important, so write this down, okay? This is, as a coach, this will help you. There's 5 steps to it. It's called curiosity, interest, knowledge, belief, enthusiasm. So those are the stages that your FA, when you present an idea to a client or to an FA or anyone, your children, they'll go through 5 steps. Curiosity, interest, knowledge, belief, enthusiasm. So the first thing you've got to do is get them at least curious, right? So once they're curious, then they'll be more willing to listen and learn, but they're not going to accept it yet. And we expect that we present an idea and they go right to enthusiasm.
Yeah, I wish.
And they don't. And that's why those 5 steps are important, because each time you present it, you might push them 1 step further. So you get curiosity, interest, knowledge, belief, enthusiasm. So you were curious about Supernova, curious enough to read the book, curiosity, interest, knowledge, you learned, read the book and you became knowledgeable and had enough interest to go a step further to hire me, right? Mm-hmm. And what we'll get you to is the belief stage. And once you really believe in something and you see the results, you'll get to enthusiasm. So then the change is over and you won't really feel like you changed. Mm-hmm. You'll feel like, this was who I was all the whole time. Mm-hmm. I just didn't realize it. This was the practice I always knew I had, but I just had to, you know, they say Michelangelo, when he carved David, he said, they said, how did you do it? He said, oh, it was really easy. David was always there. I just got rid of the rest of the marble.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So your perfect practice is already there. You just have to get rid of the marble around it.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
And I know it is. I absolutely believe that part.
Yeah. So you got the right attitude. And you read the book and you said, wow, that's me. Or you wouldn't be here, right? You said, that's me. I need that. Okay.
Now I've been reading these other books and I am all in your pages. So like, wait a minute. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, that Michelangelo analogy is a good one for you to use when coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes a person feel good. See, and that's part of what we want. We want them to feel good about themselves and their practice. And we don't want to make them feel like it's our idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, we want to make them feel as though it's their idea and that they were always really good. You just help them to get better.
No, that's great. And I've got a advisor that I, you know, want to work with. And I think he feels like this very thing, like his business is sort of out of control, you know, but now he's to the point where he's ready to retire, or he thinks he's ready to retire. But then you could talk to him on a different day and he's too afraid to even think about retiring, you know.
Oh, so, wow. How old is he?
He's 60. He either turned 66 or 67 this year. You know, COVID's kind of messed up my years. He may have turned 67 this year.
Is he active in terms of having a lot of outside interest, or is he work all the time? He is.
No, yeah, and he's the kind of guy, and he's told me numerous times he just never really took vacation and did things, you know, whenever he was coming up through the business. So now that he's a little bit older, he's doing a lot more outside. You know, he's mountain biking, and his son's in the Coast Guard, and he spends a lot of time going back and forth and seeing his grandchildren now, and that he didn't really do for years. So he's envisioned retirement. His fear is really that if he stopped working right now, his clients don't have, you know, they don't have a landing page, I guess, you know, what does it look like after you're gone? I have no idea. And I think that's really one of my goals in thinking about this, and not just for him, but for me too, is that you create a business that you can bring people up, because you talk a lot about developing people along the way. Is that my business, I could have a structure that clients are already used to, and that would create my exit in 15 years or whatever it might be,
you know, right,
for somebody else. So
yeah, we call that stair step to the stars. You're mm-hmm. you're building supernova practices that you can hand clients to and feel comfortable that they'll handle them, whether you retire or you just get too big, you know. Right. For those clients, you just don't want to discard them. You want them to go to somebody that's going to give them the same experience you're giving them.
Right, right.
So has he considered a partnership?
He has. We've talked about it numerous times, and he knows what I'm doing. You know, he knows that we've already started discussions. So I called him. He was the last call I made before we got on with you, and I told him, you know, this is what I'm doing. I'm trying to keep him in the loop. So I'm supposed to either talk to him later today. I've got appointments most of the day, but then, or we'll talk again in the morning. Cause he's been through the book, and so he's made notes. He's already started talking about segmenting his book and, you know, things like that. So he's mentally in with it. He's getting there. And then I also called one of our junior guys, a guy that I just hired from Merrill. I may have mentioned it to you last time. But he doesn't know all the nuts and bolts of the program as like I don't, but I'm further along than he is. Right. But he's going to be a willing participant also.
He's heard of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good.
His manager had all the, you know, I get, maybe he went through Supernova at some point. I don't know. His former manager at Merrill.
But, yeah. It's sort of a bizarre story, which we'll get into sometime, but just so, you know. Anyway, interesting. Not created here if you know, if human beings. I just got through talking about this with the training school at Morgan Stanley. They had a terrific program, and it worked so well. Actually, it was Merrill Lynch. Yeah, it was Merrill Lynch. With Bill Cates, it was working really, really well. And the new team came in and they said, well, we're going to go in a different direction. And he's like, but look, here are the numbers. They go, no, we're going to do something differently. And wow. that's what happened with Supernova. The new team came in and they were like, yeah, we're doing fine, but you know, we're going to go in a different direction. And I'm like, so you're not going to keep. You know, I had like only had a couple people that were working on Supernova to keep it going, and they fired them all, and I just said, well, we got to do something to keep this going because I'm getting so many requests from people, from Merrill, that I've got to have. So I wrote the book and I created the program to at least have answers and gave them this, you know, I gave them the scheduler and the things that they needed fundamentally to work on it. And then, of course, I got sucked into the vortex of other firms, UBS and Morgan Stanley. And so I've been busy, busier than I wanted to be ever since. But Merrill, I virtually have done just a little tiny bit of coaching there since I retired in 06. Wow. So isn't that funny?
And so people, very surprising.
Yeah, it's like they had the answer to cancer and they said, well, you know, we'll figure out a different solution to cancer. You go ahead. And they were like blessed me and said, go take your product and leave. And I was like, really? Okay. You let me write the book and use all the names and yep, we'll let you do all of that. Go ahead. And I was like, okay. Cause I was very nice when I left. I mean, I was, and we left on great terms, but it was, I was always just shocked by it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's the ego thing. You know, and that's the part you got to understand, that everybody's got an ego, and if they don't feel like they created it or it wasn't created here, then they aren't going to adopt it. So when you do Supernova, what you want to do is talk about customizing it for them. Make it special for them. Well, you don't, right? It's exactly the same. But you make them feel like this is your version of Supernova. Nobody else's.
I understand that part. I understand exactly what you're saying about the whole ego thing. And we do have that at Morgan Stanley too.
Everybody does. Everybody does. It's part of the nature of the beast. Now, one of the things I want you to do, and I should have it written down right here, is hire the technology team. They've got a technology team now. They've got 60 people doing it. And I wrote it on somebody's folder and I didn't write it here. So I had several teams in Pennsylvania complex try this technology support team. And what they do is they go in and they help you with your online presence and do everything. And it isn't BS. They're really getting good results. So they're making your LinkedIn page, your Facebook page, your whatever else, all much better, more, and it costs like, and the thing I like about it is it costs money, meaning you have to pay for it. Now, why do I like that? Because it will, if I'd have charged FAs at Merrill Lynch inside Merrill, it would have been a profit center.
Yeah.
And that would have kept it going. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Makes a difference.
Yeah. Even though there was virtually no expenses associated with Supernova, it wasn't a profit center. So it didn't, it was unsustainable unless you were a big supporter. And so this way, it's $2,500. Now I just had another team think about hiring a technology person and they were $25,000. Okay. Outside. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the best things I've ever, cause I'm hearing it. If I heard it from one team, I'd go, I'm hearing it from multiple teams around the complex there. And the fact that they've gone from like six guys to 60. And they're getting the same experience consistently from FAs. And the FAs don't rave about anything, as you know. Mm-hmm. They're raving about this.
Okay. That's great to know.
Yeah. So that will help. Then I don't have to teach that section on how to improve your website and your LinkedIn site and do things that I can't actually physically do with you, which would take way too much time. If we can simultaneously do that, and I would suggest you do it with your buddy who's thinking about retiring. get the two of you to sign up, go through it with him and you. You'll do a nice beta test for your market and for the rest of the guys, and then roll it out to the rest of the guys once you've gone through it. But I'm really impressed with it. Have you heard of it?
No, what's the actual name? Is it called the technology team? Is that?
No, that's what I call it because I don't know the name. I don't remember the name, but it's some, a little fancier name, but that's really, it's basically a technology team that works on your internet presence.
Okay.
So if you call them the market sales manager, he'll know or she'll know, whoever. Okay.
Okay, I'll check into that.
Yeah, it's a sort of a, and I will, once I get it, I'll start. I don't usually market other people's, you know, I mean, I don't market your products, but this one was like perfect for Supernova because it leverages you. You
know, okay. Yeah, that's great. I mean, if you can leverage something and make it easier, I'm all about that.
But. Right. And, you know, where nobody's spending any money, so they've got this surplus of cash at the end of this year they got to get rid of, and you know, internal market, your marketing budgets and things, so they're looking for places to use it, and I'm like, okay, let's, you know, this is a great use of the money.
It really is. Okay,
all right, so for today, what we have to determine is what is your absolute minimum and your target minimum, your maximum, and then your target maximum. So how many clients, you know, do you have now? How do we get down to under 100? And then if you had a magic wand and you could have 70, is that something you'd like? Or do you want to keep it at 100? Or would you like 50? Or that's kind of the ideal world, right? Like I just read Raj Bhatia has 6 FAs. I hired Raj back in 1980, and he has 1.6 billion. He has, I think, 5 FAs working with him. They've got 60 accounts between them.
Good night. Wow.
And the average is, you know, his minimum is 10 million, but his, I forget. It's an article in Forbes. Raj Bhatia was one of the first guys I ever hired when I went into management full time. I wasn't a sales manager, and Raj was diversity. He was the first Indian ever hired in the firm. And now he's, I don't know how much he's doing, 10 million or something. Anyway, so that's 60 accounts divided by 6 guys. That's 10 each, right? And the average family is like 150 million. All right. So a different kind of practice, right? But Raj started at 0 with me, right? So let's say he's doing 10 million now with 1.6 billion. So it's the model has been built. We know how to build it. I've helped many guys go from 0 to 5 or 10 million. And I know how to do it, but it takes rituals and disciplines. And I mean, look at, I can't help but digress. This is part of my ADD-ness.
A little bit myself. So,
I mean, look at the patience you had to have with the technology. Everybody says, oh, technology. The technology stocks took enormous patience in the beginning because they didn't do anything. In fact, they were volatile and were terrible, right? All of them. Facebook went down out of the offering. Salesforce went down, you know, went up, down. Yeah. Amazon was horrible for years. Yeah. And now, you know, now everybody that owns them's a genius, right?
That's right.
But you didn't realize, you don't see the patience it took to just hold on to those things when everybody else sold them, right? I made 10 points on Salesforce, and right? And they sold.
And you sold. Yeah. And today it's up, what, 40 or 50 points. Wow.
Well, I didn't sell them. I kept them, you know.
Good.
Yeah. So that's the point, is that to develop, to get you to where your potential is, you got to have that same kind of patience that you're there for 10 years. You're holding it for 10 years, not for a trade, right? And that's the way you mentally have to say, is every one of these changes is going to be good for the next 20 years. That's the part. If I can double your business, that's great, but that's not the point. The point is I can help you to double your business every 4 years. And then, you know, just be patient with it and keep doing the rituals. People give up on things that work. Oh yeah, I used to use centers of influence. That worked. Why don't you use them? Well, I don't know. I just kind of got away from it, right?
Right.
So it's just like the supernova story with Merrill Lynch. Just because it works doesn't mean people will continue to use it, especially if it takes some discipline. Mm-hmm. And regardless of how, what I'm telling you is that we will create rituals that will take away the need for real discipline. We'll turn everything over to your assistant, and that will eliminate your need for discipline, because it will just happen. You'll come in and you'll need to make 5 phone calls that day, right? That will be scheduled. No discipline necessary, just a ritual like brushing your teeth. You won't have to think about it. All you'll do is have the freedom to be, to give up all of that. It's really interesting. The discipline equals rituals, which creates freedom. People think that when you become disciplined and create rituals and you have a schedule, it creates less freedom. Well, I can't just take off and play golf. Yes, but you have the freedom to not have to think about what is going to happen tomorrow. You know exactly what's going to happen tomorrow, and you're free to think about those clients ahead of time, have an agenda, and actually be of value to them, rather than calling somebody and having them throw a curveball at you or you throw a curveball at them. Neither one of you are ready for the call. And now you're supposed to make a decision together, which only one of you is prepared for. Mm-hmm. But have them every appointment scheduled, you're prepared and they're prepared. And since they're the decision maker, why wouldn't you help them to be prepared to make a decision rather than hitting them with something which immediately they become skeptical about? Right? Give them,
exactly.
Give them a week to think about the agenda. Give them a week to add something to the agenda. Give them a week to read over what it is you enclose something that you want to discuss with them. Give them the opportunity to be ready for the call, like a board of directors meeting. What board of directors meeting would you ever go into where you, as one of the, as a CEO of the company, weren't prepared for?
Yeah, it's different. It's definitely different. You spend a different amount of time in a preparation level, and like I said, even the agenda, the presentation materials, everything for when you're presenting to a board.
Right. So every call has an agenda. Every call you go through the agenda, and every call you give the minutes or the executive summary of what you agreed to. So it's just like financial planning, hard in the beginning, easy outcomes. So when you do a financial plan, hard in the beginning, because you got to do a lot of work, but then all the fruits of it last for years.
Right. Yeah.
So every call has an agenda, which is hard. You got to be ready. You got to prepare. You got to have an, but the call is easy. and the outcome is simple and much more fruitful. The only thing it requires is people with money. Okay? The more money, the more benefit the process, because the more complicated the situation.
Right.
Especially if the person is, you know, you educate the person on creating a legacy and how the money can share their values with their family and others, how they can make an impact on the world through the use of their money. And people that are struggling to just pay the bills, this is really not, this is, that's why we eliminate small accounts.
Yeah.
Because you're wasted on them. You're like a neurosurgeon talking to somebody with a headache, okay? Mm-hmm. And all they need is an aspirin.
I need to remember that one.
The problem with me is I come up with these really cool things and then I forget them.
Maybe I can allow some of them to live on. How about that? If I can capture them in time.
So net out of this week, what you need to do is do the math. Okay. So total number of accounts. How many accounts do you have total?
So I went back and looked. The total number
households.
I've got, and I think this number is pretty close. So 241 households.
Yep.
Right.
And how many does it follow the 80-20 rule?
It generally follows the 80-20 rule.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does.
And then and what's your total revenues, let's say, for 2020 annualized?
Annualized, we're about 535.
Okay. So all you do is you take 80% of your, what I would do is I'd say, okay, take, it's probably close to 100 counts give you 80 or 90% of your business, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. So if you take the 535 and divide it by the 100 accounts, that should be your absolute minimum.
From a revenue standpoint.
Right. And then asset-wise, I'd say just at a 1% rate. That would be 500,000,
yeah.
Right? So simple game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing your homework for you.
I'm writing down as we go. Yes, this is good.
Well, you can beat up on it, but then we take the top 20% of the 100, so the top 20 accounts, and say, okay, the average revenues for those guys is probably going to be closer to 10,000, I guess. It might be 750, but my guess is it's going to be close to 10,000 or $1 million. Okay, so that becomes, and you do the math and tell me how far I'm off. It's going to be between 750,000 and a million. So what you say is, look, in reality, if I bring in clients that are less than 500,000, I'm diluting my practice. Mm-hmm. So that's my absolute minimum. I'm going to give away people. People come in, they've got 250,000, I'm going to hand them to somebody else. Okay. What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to advertise to the market that my minimum, because not because I'm cocky and I think I'm full of myself, but because I only have so much time, right? So a lawyer has to charge a certain amount of money because he can only handle so many clients. The best lawyers charge more because the demand is greater. So therefore, people think they're better. Mm-hmm. And most of the time they are.
Yeah, right.
So when you have a high minimum, people think you're better. So if you really wanted to become the top producer in your market, you'd have the highest minimum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because people would then think you were the best.
Mm-hmm. Trying to think who the top producer in our market is, if I know that they've got any minimums. So
interesting. If you don't know that, then they're not marketing themselves very well.
Well, exactly. That's you know, I think that's the opportunity here in Columbus, where I am. I mean, I don't know that anybody is marketing themselves fantastic here. I mean, there's a couple, probably AJ Morris. You know that name? You probably know AJ.
Yeah.
Yeah, AJ. He's a good guy. He's in our town. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Family Asset Management over at one of the banks. And they're $25 million minimum. So, okay.
So think about that. And it's okay to have a higher minimum than your practice is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can raise your minimum to 2 million and fine. Nobody knows that your practice isn't that big.
Right, sure.
You know, so you just raise it to whatever you think would get somebody's attention. Mm-hmm. But for practical purposes, that's basically what we do. Then you say to yourself, okay, what do I want? You know, what would I like my practice to look like? How hard do I want to work? So the average financial advisor after 2 or 3 years of doing Supernova has 70 clients.
Okay.
Okay. It's just a different business, right? It's a simpler business. It's more focused. It's a concierge practice versus Edward Jones, right?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. They have 1,000 accounts. The good guys have 1,000 accounts doing 1 million. Mm-hmm. And if they want to do 2 million, they get 2 million. They get 2,000 accounts. They want to do 3, they get 3,000 accounts.
Right. Wow.
That's what they do.
Mm-hmm. That's a different model. Yeah.
Different model. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's all the time we have today, but that's basically the challenge for week one. Now, one of the things I want you to do is when you watch the video, I want you to write down questions.
Okay.
Do the homework. Write out the homework and then write out questions. If you don't have any questions, I don't think you've done the homework.
Okay.
And don't think that any question is too dumb.
Okay.
There's no judgment here.
Yeah.
I know this material. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get it in your head. I don't care how you get it there.
Okay.
The questions and answers are the best way for us to interact because then I can help you. The other thing is to coach your buddy at the same time you're going through it.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and tell him what he needs to do for week one.
Okay. Okay.
And so by sharing and teaching him, you'll force yourself to learn it. Mm-hmm. So learn it, do it, teach it. And we'll do this automatically and we'll just experiment with you being the coach. I'd say to go ahead and sign him up. But we don't need to. You can coach him. Okay?
Yeah, no, I'm excited about the, you know, getting him involved. It'll change his life, literally, if he can.
Right.
do it, because he'll feel a lot better. He won't feel like he's got to work till he dies. You know, I think he feels like he's got to be accountable forever with this large number of clients.
Right. And he won't feel like he needs to work nights and weekends. And this every day when you go home with Supernova, you feel done. Mm-hmm. And you've never felt done for the last 5 years. Right?
It's a very fleeting feeling.
Yeah. When you mow your lawn, you feel done.
That's right.
When you call your five clients every day, you feel done. Okay. And then we'll work the prospecting into it so you really feel done. But that's basically the difference. You won't feel, every client gets called every month. It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
Nobody is ever neglected. You don't have that angst of, oh God, what guilt. The guilt is all gone.
See, and the guilt for me has translated into lower revenues. I've noticed, especially in the last however many years, because, and maybe it's whenever I started doing the manager role, is, you know, if you don't feel like you're servicing somebody properly, then you don't necessarily feel like you should charge them as much money. And that's a bad way to be. Yeah.
Right. So you can, this is critical for you in the management role. You can't afford to do anything else. Mm-hmm. I loved coaching managers because they get it. I mean, they got 50% of their day half the time that they got to spend managing problems and crap. And therefore they got to be really efficient. You can't waste time on small people. You'd love to, but you don't have time.
Right.
And so what you find out is, even after you're done managing, this makes all the sense in the world. Why was I doing the other? Mm-hmm. It's so crazy. But when you're really busy, you get it. Mm-hmm. When when there's no time.
Right. Okay. So help me dial in on my assignment for this week.
Okay. The assignment for this week is to double check the math on what I said.
Okay.
All right. So you want to go through and tell me where my math was wrong.
Okay.
So you take your total revenues divided by 100. That equals your absolute minimum. And then look at the top 20%. The average of the top 20% is your target minimum.
Okay. I can do all that.
Right. And then what you really should do is go through those top, let's say 20 or 30 clients, and tell me where they came from.
Okay.
Okay. So what we're looking for is a niche or a center of influence or something that is repeatable. Okay. Something that we may have overlooked.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about niche marketing and developing centers of influence. So at each core, each time we're going to do what three, where it's like three people swimming down the swimming pool at the same time. Segmentation, organization, and acquisition. We're going to do all three all the time. So even from week one, we're thinking about acquisition. Organization wise, you should call, have your assistant call Cindy Bowie and set up a call on how to use the scheduler.
Okay.
And that will be enough for this week.
Okay. So I'll have my assistant reach out to Cindy.
And she'll schedule a 1-hour training program on how to use the scheduler.
Perfect. Okay.
Now, you're at home. You're not working in the office anymore,
right? I'm in the office. I'm in the office today, and the branch reopens on Monday.
Oh, great. Yeah. All right, then we'll start working on folders. Great. We can go back to, oh, super. God.
So I don't have my assistant in the office, though.
Will she come in?
Well, no, I'm not going to be able to get her in right away. She's got, she's actually got MS.
And okay.
So she's a little.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's a little dangerous for her. But I can get somebody else to help me with the folders.
Awesome.
I'll find somebody that can help me.
Yes. Okay, so you want to start building the folders, and Cindy can help with that. It's in the workbook. It teaches you how to do it. So technically, we don't cover organization till week 5, but I want to cover it now because I want you to start to learn how to build the folders right away. I didn't mention segmentation. You want to figure out what you're going to do with who you're going to keep. So draw a line at 100 and say, are these the people I really want to keep? And then look below that and say, is there anybody below here who we really need to save? Okay. And then take a hard look at those people and figure out where they should go. Is there a home for them that would be better suited for, you know, could you help out a young FA? Could, you know, somebody that doesn't care about how many clients they have, but still gives good service. They don't prospect and they just call people that you like. They're good hearted, but they're just not good acquirers of assets, mm-hmm. you know, and start to figure out where those clients can go. Okay.
Yep. That sounds fine. And whenever you give up, I've kind of read this in there. So when you give away clients, we're not going into partnership with
no.
them. These are gone and gone. Okay.
Yeah. And we'll work on the script of what to say next week. Okay.
Okay. And I've read several of your scripts and I like the way that you do it. You and I are very similar, in that way. So.
Okay. So we'll practice that next week.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you, Rob. Take care. Right. Have a good week.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. See you soon. Bye.